Welcome to the Flow State Performance Podcast. My name is Jiro Taylor, the host of the show, and this is a podcast for entrepreneurs, for freedom seekers, for purpose hunters. This is for you if you want to achieve inner growth and supercharge your life and unleash your potential, purpose, and your higher states of performance, because that's really what flow states are all about. So the show has been on a break for a few months. I got married. My 1 week honeymoon turned into 3 months, turned into 8 months, turned into living in Bali, turned into living in flow and exploring my limitations. And here I am, back to relaunch it. So if you're returning back, welcome back. If you're a new listener, that's awesome. I'll just fill you in on what this show is all about. So last season, we covered a lot of ground discovering the roots of inner growth. I interviewed neuroscientists, entrepreneurs, adventurers, and really highlighted a new kind of success where it's all about authenticity, presence, peak states, and impact, and less about how much money you got in the bank and how many cars you got in the driveway. It's more about this inner state of fulfillment and freedom. This season, I plan to continue this theme, but I really want to showcase a new kind of hero. I'm going to be interviewing entrepreneurs who do things differently. Those entrepreneurs who really embody this idea of inner growth driving outer impact. I'm also going to be interviewing all sorts of adventurers and artists and other people who embody that lifestyle of living in flow, of living with presence, with power, and with purpose. So on today's show, we have Nathan Chan. I'm speaking with the CEO and founder of foundermag.com. So this is an online magazine for young entrepreneurs. If you're in Australia, I'm sure that you've heard of it. Maybe anywhere in the world you might have heard of it, because it's blown up in the last few years. If you're sitting in your 9 to 5 in your job feeling unfulfilled and just waiting for that perfect moment to escape the city and launch your business, you got to listen in, because Nathan is a living example of a guy who had no business experience but a whole load of drive and a very clear idea that he wanted to bring to life. So starting from scratch, he had no publishing background, no media background, no advertising background, no entrepreneur background, but he built up Founder as a side hustle while he was working in this 9 to 5 that wasn't fulfilling him, and he threw all of his energy and time into this project, and the results have been quite staggering. Founder has grown into a brand to be reckoned with. They have outrageous customer stats and engagement. They've landed Richard Branson, Seth Godin, and more on the covers. But what really impresses me is not the stats. It's the focus. It's the vibe. It's the feeling I get that they really want to just provide real support to the community that they inspire. It feels like a family. So every step along the customer journey with Founder, you sense humility, you sense support. And as a result, they're really helping young entrepreneurs get the inspiration, tools, and strategies that they need to launch. I really get the feeling that Nathan and his team care. I really feel like they really, really care. So on this interview, I got into Nathan's mindset pre-launch and how his mindset has evolved as they've moved past growth phase and into past early stage, survival stage, and into growth phase. So if you're interested in the mindset of a young entrepreneur who's put everything on the line and what his habits are for success, and if you want to know what it takes to build a business from scratch, then listen into the show. I know you're going to love it. Welcome to the Flow State Performance Podcast. I'm here today with Nathan Chan, who is a publisher, the founder of Founder Magazine for Young Entrepreneurs. Nathan, how are you doing?
I'm great, thanks, Jura. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really well, thanks. I'm really well. Just so our audience can place you, where are you at right now, and how are you feeling?
Okay, so I'm in my home office and woke up about an hour ago. So, yeah, little tired. I've been working around the clock because I go to the States next week, and I'm doing too much at the moment.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like you like to take on pretty significant challenges. And one thing I noticed from following your journey over the last 4 years is, your work ethic seems to be extraordinarily high. Has it always been that way?
No, it hasn't. I think I've always had a good work ethic. Like whenever, you know, I was pretty lazy at uni.
Weren't we all, mate?
Yeah, so I was really lazy at uni, but you know, when I was working, like in terms of like my job, like what, you know, my part-time job, when I was working at like Target or McDonald's or whatever, like I was always, like I never really took breaks. Like I was always like, you know, as soon as I finished uni, I'd fill my whole university holidays or anything just working. And if I ever had any spare time, I'd, you know, have a shift here doing X, Y, and Z. So I've always just been just working. I really enjoy it. That's just who I am. But yeah, look, when I had my other, you know, when I was working in like corporate, yeah, I did have a good work ethic then as well. Obviously didn't work. No way worked as hard as I work now. But that's because I didn't love it. Now that I love it, it's different, you know, it doesn't feel like work.
Yeah. It kind of changes the whole definition of work, doesn't it? Like it,
yeah,
the word doesn't almost fit because everybody associates the word work with, you know, the stuff that you have to do. But when it's the stuff that you want to do, we need a new work for that. It's somewhere between play and work. You know what I mean? It's not quite play because we're not, you know, play is something different. But it's like this purposeful, I don't know, it's the stuff that we'd be doing even if, you know, we didn't need to be doing it. So tell me, man, like it's been a crazy 4 years. Is it 4 years since you launched Founder?
Yeah. So yeah, March 5th, 2013. So in 2 days, it's our 4 year anniversary.
When you look back over those 4 years, what are the sort of words or emotions that spring up for you?
Yeah. Wow. Accomplishment, impact, excitement, joy, knowledge, achievement. Yeah, heaps of things, man. It's been a crazy 4 years. Been really, really rewarding as well. But yeah, in many ways I feel like I'm just getting warmed up, you know?
Yeah, I know exactly that feeling. So when a lot of people in the startup world use the metaphor of jumping out of a plane and learning how to build a parachute on the way down, is that something that resonates with you?
100%. 100%. I think it's only been probably, to be honest with you, Giro, like the past year or year and a half of, you know, so in the first, you know, in the first 2 years, you know, I was still kind of working things out, but it's really been the past year that I've really worked out a solid, I guess, pathway and roadmap and business model of what the company looks like and what our focuses need to be. Now, this year, it's all about creating those foundations more than ever and setting up those templates to really just do everything at 10x this year and next. So, yeah, I think, yeah, for sure. Like, I think we've kind of got now – if you use that analogy, I think we've kind of got the parachute built, and now how do we, you know, do it at scale? That's kind of you know what we're looking at. So yeah, it's been really, really fun, and it's been a lot of learning.
So you basically said that the last year and a half, it's been around the strategy, the visions, and really getting clearer, which kind of means that for the first 2 years and a half, you guys were flying by the seat of your pants. Is that the case? Or I was just reading Daniel Flynn's book, the Thank You, the founder of Thank You Water, and he very much talks about just flying by the seat of his pants, or just, you know, just this kind of like the awesomeness of kind of naivety and innocence, in the sense that you kind of have permission to just do what the hell you want without these, you know, arbitrary limitations. Did you find that?
Yeah, no, it's awesome, man. It's like, you know, you get a blank canvas and you can paint whatever you want. So yeah, I've just kind of been just trying to work things out and just kind of just test and see and get a feel and think. And it's taken a lot of, of thinking and strategy to work out, you know, these past 4 years, what I want Founder to look like for the next 4 or 5 years. And I think, you know, now we've got a pretty, pretty solid roadmap. And I wouldn't even say the next 4 or 5 years. I'd say the next 2 or 3 years from now, what it's going to look like. And I'm pretty sure on that vision now, and I'm pretty sure on what the mechanics are and what needs to happen. So, yeah, it's really exciting that we're going to have, like, you know, this year is obviously going to look much different to next, but it'll still be around, you know, it'll be pretty, you know, we'll be on the same path, you know, like it won't be narrow, it won't be windy like it's been the past few years, which is exciting, you know.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, the windiness of the path when you first start out. I think you'll probably agree with me, but a lot of entrepreneurs at the beginning really kind of have the handbrake of their car on because they're looking for the definite, clear path to success. And every time I speak to a successful entrepreneur, well, 9 times out of 10, there's like a period of windiness. It's like snakes and ladders. You go up this bit and then there's a dead end, and then you try another bit and then there's another dead end. And it's almost like you have to go through this process to find the one track that now you have clarity on. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, 100%. You know, when I started the magazine, I honestly just thought, you know, I'd just do the magazine forever. And we still do the magazine, but, you know, many, many things have changed around that. And, yeah, you know, you just don't know. You just kind of have to just – especially I think the cool thing is if you've never done – if you don't come from that industry, like, you know, how – like, and I'm not – like, you know, just a great example is like how Elon Musk, he's never built cars before. So he approaches it from a place of not knowing and just what feels right. So a lot of industries that are disrupted or changed or, you know, have innovation usually come from people that have no background in what they're starting out to do. And that was the same case for me with Founder. I had no background in regards to publishing, digital media, any content, nothing, you know, no journalism background, nothing. And I've just kind of seeked out what has felt right and just worked it out along the way. And, you know, I could take this company and the business and what we're doing in many, many different directions, but I'm pretty sure on this new direction, or well, not even new direction, but the current direction we're on, the current trajectory.
Oh, dude, it feels awesome. Just as a customer, it feels awesome. Like I used to be a member of several different membership platforms, and now I'm just a member of one, which is Founder Club, and that's the way I access all the magazines and be part of a community of entrepreneurs. It's awesome what you guys are doing, and I can feel how you're building the platform in such a way that you can just start to plug in products that are really aligned to the actual needs of this tribe, this audience that you're building, which is so on point.
Oh, well, thank you, man. Yeah, that's where it's at, bro.
Cool. So I'm fascinated by not just the past, but more about how people get to where they've got to, because it's never a linear path, as we've discussed. When I look at my past, it's like, I had no idea where I'd be right now, like doing the sort of stuff that I'm doing, and I'm sure that the same is for you. But just talk me through some of your past. So I like that kind of, what are the standout journeys when you think about where you are as an entrepreneur now, and you think about, like, is that what you planned to be as a child? Did you have any dreams, or did you just want to be an astronaut like the rest of us?
Didn't have much ambition, actually, to be honest. Didn't want to be an astronaut. I don't know. I always used to say I wanted to be a lawyer or a journalist. The journalist one's interesting because, in a way, I kind of am. But yeah, I always said I wanted to also. I thought forensic investigating was fascinating as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah. No, I had no dreams, hopes, aspirations to be an entrepreneur, not even in my early 20s, man. Look, it was in my early 20s. So I started Founder, when I was 25? Yeah, when I was 25.
And before that, you were working. I know that you did some marketing at uni, and I know that you then went into IT, and I know that you started working for a pretty successful startup, I believe, the guys at Intrepid Travel. How did that sort of inform where you are now? Because, you know, whilst you're working at a startup, you were kind of in the boiler room, doing IT stuff. How did the culture, or how did that kind of company vibe influence you?
Yeah, look, the culture was amazing. You know, Intrepid Travel is a really amazing company. And, when I wanted to leave, it wasn't because of the company. It was more because of the work that I was doing in regards to IT. I'm still friends. The founder is one of the founders is a really great mentor of mine now. So we still catch up. I'm actually catching up with him. We just locked in a catch up this time next month. So yeah, the company's amazing. They, I don't know if you'd call them a startup anymore though, because they've been around for 30 years. But they definitely, definitely does have that startup kind of vibe and story still to this day. It was two guys. They had a van. They hired a van, and they just took 10 friends on a trip around Southeast Asia, and then they turned that into a business. Now they serve, I think, at least 100,000. They take 100,000 people on all sorts of tours, or maybe 200,000. I can't remember, but every single year. So yeah, no, incredible organization, and the culture is really, really cool, and I learned a lot there. But yeah, for me, it was kind of like, I remember in the early days, I remember there was a guy that I knew that I used to, just have drinks with, or just knew from around the area, that his title was entrepreneur, and I didn't even know what that meant.
Really?
Literally, I did not even know what that meant when I was, 18, 19, 20. Never, ever had a thought that I'd be doing the stuff that I'm doing now.
Wow, isn't that fascinating?
I just kind of fell into it, man.
So clearly your upbringing, clearly your parents, like my parents, were not entrepreneurs. I suppose most people's parents weren't entrepreneurs. But were you kind of brought up in the whole kind of culture of, well, be a lawyer or an accountant, or go to university, get yourself a career and a pension and safety and security, and do that kind of living?
100%. 100%.
Yeah. And there's something shifting, right? Because, your entire business is founded on this notion of new opportunities for young entrepreneurs to go out and be the master of their own destiny. It's when I speak to my dad about what I do, there's almost like a complete lack of ability to understand that, to him, the risks are just unbelievable. But to me, and to you, the risks of staying within a company for 30 years would be unbelievable in a different sort of way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. I agree.
It's interesting how this shift is happening during our lifetime, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. So, yeah, man, like right now, there's no better time in history to be able to do the stuff that we're doing. I think that's once you have that realization, and once you let go of thinking, okay, well, I have skills. What's the worst that can happen? I just have to go back. I can go back to my day job, and you have the ability of choice. That's when it becomes really powerful.
So let's break that down, because obviously there's many people out there listening. I've noticed that there's many people in the founder club community who are at the stage of their journey where the entrepreneurship is a side hustle. Okay, so they're still working the 40 or the 50 hour weeks. They still have a boss above them, but they have a dream. So let's break down a little bit this kind of process. I've been through it myself. I think that there's a dumb way to do it and a smarter way to do it. What advice do you give to people who have the clear idea, but I don't know, they're kind of stalling, they're kind of waiting for the perfect opportunity to break out. Because I see a lot of people in this middle ground, if they just gave themselves more time and actually more pressure to launch the thing, to do the thing, then, you know, that would be the fast track to success. So what's your advice to people who are kind of like splitting their energies between employment and entrepreneurship?
I think you kind of have to. That's your rite of passage. Mm. Like, I think I don't, like with me, with Founder, it took me a year to build it up before I even left. So I was still doing the day job thing at Intrepid, just doing work that I didn't enjoy, but loved the culture of the company and loved the people, for a good year before I went full time on the magazine. And I think you have to do it that way, because if you don't, I just don't know. I know others do it, and I know others have successfully done it where they've just left their job and they've just kind of worked it out cold. But I think more often than not, most people struggle to work it out cold. I think you've got to always have money to come in to pay the bills. I don't particularly like risk. Mm-hmm. I always like to lower and mitigate my risk as much as possible. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of, yeah.
That, yeah, I mean, that's the kind of way you have to do it. You can't really think straight, can you? If you're in survival mode, it's not as though you're going to do your best creative thinking. So yeah, I completely agree. You have to mitigate risk. You really have to create a game plan where you have a buffer. You can create a sort of safe zone so that you can actually do your best work. Because if you're worried about whether you can put food on your kid's table all the time, then you're just going to be in this state of frantic panic the whole time.
Yeah, so, I agree, 100%.
Cool, man. So talk to me about those early days. I'm sure that there were moments where you were just like, shit, I don't know if I'm going to pull this off. When was the moment where you realized, actually, this is it. This is actually going to work.
Yeah, look, it took a while, actually. Even after I left my day job, to be honest with you, Jiro, like, I did have a lot of doubts. I did have a lot of doubts that this, you know, that this might not work. And it took me a while to really start to believe in myself, yeah, even after I left my day job. So with full transparency, man, like, I was doing some consulting on the side because I was like, oh, you know, maybe I can do the magazine, and also I could do some consulting, like magazine consulting. And I was doing that. And I remember, like, I was just trying to work things out, you know. I was doing the magazine consulting on the side, and I was just like, oh, okay. Because a lot of people were asking me at that time. It's funny how things change. Like, no one asked me now to do magazine consulting at all. People did, though, back in those days when I first left, which was interesting. I don't know why, but, yeah, kind of I was doing that, and I was thinking, yeah, I can just do the magazine, bit of consulting. And yeah, I didn't really know. I had no idea if it would work. And I remember even speaking to this guy. I don't know why, but I found his work on a blog, and like he said, he just does free calls just to help founders. Like, I don't even know why he did it, but he was just a really nice guy, and he did free calls. And I remember calling him up, like booking a call, and just chatted to him about stuff, and said, you know, have I found product market fit? And he's like, man, you definitely have. You've got thousands of customers, thousands of subscribers to the magazine. What are you talking about? So for sure, I was doubtful.
Wow. So you didn't actually realize the value of what you had created until someone else pointed it out.
100%.
Wow. So talk to me a little bit about the self-doubt and the self-belief, self-belief being, I guess, the other side of the coin to self-doubt. So this is obviously the thing that paralyzes a lot of people. It's the voice in our head that says, maybe you're not good enough, maybe the idea isn't good enough, maybe the competition are too good, all that sort of inner dialogue piece. What strategies or ways have you found to deal with that thing?
I think it's a combination of things. I think the more and more you hear from people in your community or people that you've changed their lives or they've had a massive impact from your work, that's a big one. That's a big one that definitely keeps you going and definitely helps, build you up. And then winning also is another one that helps build you up as well, like having wins.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with winning now. I don't like to lose. I'm very competitive. I never used to be very competitive, but I am now with everything, not just business, but anything now. So I like winning a lot. So just, how do you win? You work hard, man. And you speak to the best and you find out what's working from the best and you find out what's working and how to do it from people that you admire that are doing things that you want to do. So, that's kind of – they're the kind of things that I do. And then, I set goals and I reach them. The more goals you set and the more goals that you reach, you build confidence. Mm-hmm. What builds confidence is experience. And there's nothing wrong with, building your confidence. I don't think that's bad. They're the kind of things that I'm doing to kind of build myself up.
And when you do goals, are we talking what sort of time frame do you typically set for your goals?
Usually I do it by the year, and that's held me in pretty good stead. So what I would do is just at the start of every year, I will not even now, like for my goals this year, I started working on them in November, man. I'd start working on those goals pretty early on and work out what I got to achieve for the year and just keep ticking it off.
And that's an awesome process, man. It's really funny the way that these years, in one sense they're kind of like who invented January and February and all this kind of stuff, but on another sense it's kind of how we organize our life, and it can be very powerful to get, when you get to the end of the year and you look back over 2016, and then I love that process of looking back and then looking to the future. But 1 year is a long it's a long time frame. I always find that I love having my 1 year goals. And then I like to sort of chunk them down so that I can, I guess, maximize my smaller periods of time, like my weeks and my days and my hours. How do you stay on track to optimize to reach those 1 year goals?
Well, there's a few things. One thing I do is I write them down and I look at them every single day. And this year we actually, like for the business goals, we actually did like a project timeline, and it was like a massive project timeline. So there's certain things that have to happen by end of quarter one. There's certain things that have to happen by June or July, and it's all mapped down. So every, for the business goals, it's not just about me anymore. It's like, I set the vision and I work with the team. We did a team retreat and then we worked out, how we're going to achieve all these things, and we all agree that it's achievable. Then we work out who's responsible and who's doing what. And then from there, we check in every single week and we've blown up, this 2017 goals and timeline, like massive, like a big A3 or A2 on the wall. And then, everyone sees it every single day. So that's how we keep and stay accountable. I agree, a year is a long time. That's why you have to break it up and chunk it up into small pieces, and you have to track them every single week and see how you're on track. So that's something a lot of successful companies do that I didn't know, is you set these goals and then you do what's called a traffic light reporting, weekly reporting. And you break it down by the week, and you have certain people responsible for certain goals, and you literally, you know, check in every single week. And if you're on track, you're on green. If you're just a little bit off, you're in orange. And if you're not on track, you're in red. And certain people are responsible for certain goals, and you check in, and that's what you do, man.
Cool. That's really interesting. So a couple of things there. So you talked about breaking things down into quarterly goals, which is awesome. There's some psychological research that confirms that 90 days is actually the optimal time for us to visualize our future. Beyond that, it starts getting a little bit fuzzy. And less than that, it starts becoming all a little bit short term. So that's really awesome that you're doing that. This traffic light system of I guess accountability, that's really fascinating. So what actually happens when somebody's got, you know, like reds across the board?
Well, with full transparency, this is a new year thing that we've been doing, yeah. And we're still teething through it because we have some aggressive goals. So we, like, if they are in red, we're not too harsh at the moment, and just kind of work on, you know, that's my job to work with that person to see how we're going. But, you know, we've got such aggressive goals that it is difficult to jump into them. So we might have to rejig the goals because they are so aggressive. We just have to see. We're going to reevaluate it this quarter because we've only had 2 months of the year. So yeah, it's hard to say, like, but we're not too harsh, you know. Cool. Like, it just is what it is. So yeah, I hope that answers your question. But yeah, one thing I've noticed is a lot of successful companies do this. We're doing it now, and I think that's the way to go. Last year for the business, it was just me, and yes, I did achieve a lot of goals last year, but now the business has grown significantly. It's not enough for me to just have these goals. I need everyone in the team to have these goals.
Awesome, man. I'd love to get a little bit deeper into the culture and the team building side of things, because, you know, this has all just happened for you in the last few years, and you're the sort of guy that, you know, learns as you go. And yeah, I'd love to explore that. First of all, when I was in the corporate world, I remember getting really frustrated at what seemed to be really inefficient work practices, like meetings all the time, and people just like being able to distract me and expecting me to reply to their emails and their phone calls like all the time. And I remember it just feeling like, oh, this is really silly because it's taking me out of my flow. It's you know, I'm in this reactive mode rather than this creative mode. So first of all, is that something that you found, and is that something that you're, I guess, responding to with this new culture that you're creating?
Yeah, 100%. Like, one thing we're doing now is we have a new rule where we only do meetings on Mondays.
Oh, I love it, man.
Yeah. So we do all of our meetings on Mondays. If we do, like, do anything like, you know, catch-ups or whatever, like informal, it's like not like a scheduled meeting. But, yeah, for the most part, we're pretty good at sticking to that. So we only do meetings on Mondays. For me, like, that's as a team. For me, I'm doing a lot of meetings because that's kind of like what I do. But, you know, I try and have Wednesdays and Thursdays my meeting day free stuff. And yeah, look, we do meetings if we have to do them urgently, but for the most part, we're sticking to that, which is pretty good. So then, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday is when we kind of get stuff done. So, you know, that's something that is a good rule that we have that works well, I think.
I think that's really clever. I think the idea of just batching everything is really smart, you know, because at the end of the day, it's we all know that our businesses are going to do better if more people within the business can immerse themselves 100% in the tasks that they're doing. So I think the idea of having these days where there's meetings and there's days where there's deep immersion in creative work is really smart, man. So what?
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah. So talk to me more about, you know, culture, you know, blank piece of paper. You guys are really, I guess, in building mode. I know that you've got, you know, first of all, like, how many of your staff are actually remote versus not remote in percentage wise?
Yeah. So another thing that I've learned is that when it comes to, like building a company, you just kind of have to decide whether you're going to do 100% remote or 100%, well, not 100%, but core team in one location. And I decided, I've decided that we'll have core team here in Melbourne. I do want to set up an office in LA, but for the most part, you know, core team will be in Melbourne for now. And, you know, when we set up the LA office, we'll see how things go there. But for now, core team is in Melbourne. All the strategy comes out of Melbourne, and that's still the case. So, you know, we've got David, who does product and biz dev and strategy with me. We've got JC, who does he's like our content manager. And then we've got Jesse, who is doing our systems and automation and all those kinds of things and marketing stuff. And then there's me. And then we've got also Asiya, but she's in Canada, and she manages the magazine and also found a club. She's our community manager. Mm-hmm. Then we've got Tate, who is in he's in Boston. Mm. So Tate's in Boston. And he's working on he's the copy editor for the magazine and the blog. Then we just hired a managing editor, and she's in somewhere, I can't remember where exactly, in America, but she's the managing editor for the blog. Then we've got, you know, a string of contractors. So like I would consider, you know, Asiya, Tate, Jenna, the girls in the Philippines, I'll consider them kind of contractors. We have heaps. We have, you know, people that are doing analytics. We have people that are doing, you know, more marketing consulting stuff. We have at least, you know, 10 different writers that are contractors for us. So we have a lot of different people doing all sorts of different things for us. So collectively you would say, you know, there's about 10 of us that are constantly doing things. Mm. But yeah, core team, there's only about 7 of us.
Mm, okay, interesting. So what about the actual design and layout of the magazine? Well, basically all your stuff looks really slick, man. Like, I know that it's something that a lot of intention has gone into, the way that you've created the look, the brand, of not just the magazine, but the membership community. I remember asking you, like, who's helping you with this stuff? And you steered me and Troy Dean, of Rockstar Empire fame. But obviously a lot of intention has gone into this. So do you have in-house design, or is it all outsourced?
Yeah, so for the magazine and any branding and stuff, we use an amazing designer. His name's Karan, and I've been working with him since the beginning. So you could say he's kind of in-house, but he's in India. We've been working with him since the beginning. But then, you know, we have contract web designers, in particular for Founder Club. You know, Troy's team built that out. We just have a lot of different contractors that we work with. We've got another designer that's in-house as well right now. His name's Giuliano. He's from Italy. So, yeah, still the same strategy applies. All the strategy comes from Melbourne, and then the execution is done out of Melbourne. Right. Execution done is done in Melbourne, but a lot of it is done out of Melbourne with contractors.
Right. So obviously your role has evolved. I'm sure that there was a stage where you were doing everything because you were the entirety of the operation.
Of course. Right?
And now I imagine your role has evolved a lot. So what do you feel is the best use of your time these days?
I think that's a really good question, because I think, you know, before, when we first jumped on the call, I said I'm doing too much. And I said to one of my mentors, I feel I'm doing too much. And he said, I said, I'm feeling a little bit stressed out at the moment. What do you do? And he said, yeah. And I said, and like, I meditate and I go to the gym. And he said, yeah, usually when it feels that way, you're doing too much. And I think, yeah, I am doing too much. So I need to focus in on what I'm really good at. And what's going to get, you know, 80-20 rule, right? Pareto's law, you know.
Yeah.
20% of your time yields 80% of results. So that's what I've been thinking about this past day. And I think you know, if I look at my list of things I have to do, you know, I probably should be delegating more. But it's more like there's things on my list that I'm not responsible for but are on my mind that I need to get sorted that I'm not responsible for. So I am delegating in that sense. But to answer your question, where is my time best spent? I think around the creative stuff, like I'm quite good at that. So probably the marketing strategy and product stuff, that's probably where I'm really, really good. So just the creative stuff, the marketing stuff, and the product stuff. That's where I'm best. That's where my biggest strong suit is. I'm not a bad manager. I'm okay, but one of my goals this year is to get an operations manager in to manage all that side of things, because I'm not that good at that. And I don't particularly enjoy it that much. So
does the idea of having 100% of your time, where you can focus on the creative stuff, the new products, and the launch strategies for all of those, does that idea kind of excite you?
100%, man. 100%. Yeah. That would excite me for sure. Like, just working on product and marketing stuff. That's my really strong point. Like, awesome. You know, there's certain things in the business that I'm not very good at. I'm not a great writer, or I'm not very good at creating, you know, written content and stuff like that. But what I am really good at is just kind of, I don't know, if you look at the book, like Founder Version 1.0, you know, there were certain things that I did that only I could have done around the execution of that, like the landing page, making sure that was just so on point, and finding just like the most amazing designer. Like in that instance, I found the ex-head of design for 99 Designs, and I convinced and worked with him on that one. And now I'm working with him on like the microsite for that book. So like just little things like that, or just working with Karan to do the design of that book and making sure that it's just like as good as it possibly can be. Just little things like that I'm quite good at, or the, you know, just the creative stuff, like I am quite strong at that. That's probably where my time is best spent. But then also on the product side and working out, you know, the vision, that kind of side of things is quite strong as well. So the strategy.
Cool, man. So you mentioned the word vision. Do you have a process in place, or a way that you would optimize your visionary abilities? Is it you sitting in the bathtub, or going on holiday, or is it meditation, or is it something that you schedule into your calendar where you have like a vision day, or is it just kind of stuff that just comes up and you track it? Like, how do you vision for the future?
Yeah. Oh man, I wish I could tell you I had a framework or strategy, but it's just winging it, bro.
Yeah, no, I feel you. I think it's important for people to hear that.
Yeah, because I got nothing for you there. I don't even, you know, one of my mentors, he said he spends a big amount of his time allocating to just thinking. I don't do that, man. Yeah. I'm just constantly thinking. Don't get me wrong. This is an obsession for me. If I'm riding my bike to work, to the office, like I'm thinking about work. If I'm driving, I'm thinking about work. From the shower, I'm thinking about work.
Yeah.
So everywhere I am, I'm thinking about it, and that's kind of how I just hone in on strategy and vision. And then, I don't know, I think the things that just keep coming back to me are the ones that I just kind of, you know, it kind of builds out that picture and that canvas and what we're going to paint. But yeah, sorry, man.
No, man. I don't want a certain answer. I want to know how successful people do it, and winging it. It's not actually winging it. It's actually, if you break it down, it's the process of thoughts connecting with other thoughts, connecting with opportunities, connecting with conversations that you have and things that you read. So it's far from winging it. It's actually just like you're immersing your consciousness in your passion, and then, you know, stuff comes out from that. Which is fascinating. I do wonder though whether in 10 years time or in 15 years time, you know, after having all this experience doing this stuff, you'll actually have like a, I don't know, like an optimized process. I wonder if Richard Branson actually has like this, you'd know better than me, but whether he actually has like this really refined visioning process.
Not sure. I reckon those guys would probably.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting. So, Nathan, we're going to have to wrap it up. So I just wanted to help the audience connect with you and learn more about how they can follow the journey that you guys are on. So where can people read up about you and also just connect, be a part of your community?
So the best place that people can find us is if you just go to founder, founder.com.
Awesome. Hey, man, thank you so much for your time. It's been a really good chat. I know it's been early in the morning, but you've been on point. You've given some really powerful tips for people who are starting their journey. So I appreciate you and your time. Thank you, Nathan.
Oh, look, thank you so much for the opportunity, man. I really appreciate it.
Cool. Speak soon, brother.
Boom.
So I hope you enjoyed that chat with Nathan Chan. Make sure you sign up to foundermag.com and check them out. You'll get loads of great value on the business side of things. They really have a whole bunch of tools and strategies, and the content is just fantastic. If you're looking for growth more on the inner development side of things, if you really want a pathway to develop yourself, to feel more present, to feel more powerful, to supercharge your life, to get a clear focus on who you are and the pathway ahead of you, if you want a map to a more powerful life, then I'm inviting you to apply for Flow State's new mastermind program, Limitless, which is launching on April the 11th. And this brings together a tribe of entrepreneurial people determined to be the best version of themselves. If you want the inspiration of other people walking the same path, if you want clear tools and a map to help you get from that place where you're feeling a little bit anxious, a little bit blocked, a little bit unclear about how to actually do this thing called inner growth, then this is for you. I'm going to guide you along a map to your highest potential. So if you're interested, go to www.flowtribe.co, flowtribe.co, and check it out, apply. There's a bit of an application process to make sure that it's the right program for you. And otherwise, I can't wait to tune in next week. So I'll see you on the podcast next week. Tell all your friends. I'm so stoked to be back giving these podcasts, making these podcasts for you guys. Let me know if you got any feedback. Let me know if you've got any awesome people that you think I should have on the show. Otherwise, I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Flow State Performance Podcast. Check us out at www.flowstateperformance.com for more inspiration to unleash your potential.